This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air on my Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch channels with Linda Grizzly. Welcome to the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the welcome, Phantom.
Well, I want to let people know that we are a featured podcast on the Newsly Network. You may not have heard of that before, but we are featured there in an audio version of this podcast. If you check out that with a coupon code of Ghost, you can check that out for 30 days, whether or not you want to, you know, stay with them, but you can just check it out. We will be on Newsly later today. We do also have your Bitly link, and that'll be fully clickable. And I'll just, you know, say it's bit.ly/3u6mlaja. And but you don't have to really remember that, because you can click through everywhere that we're going to be published and go directly to that link. But again, thank you for being on the show. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today that I have listed is Mindset Matters, exploring the link between mindset and wealth creation. We'll also talk about your story and your background. One of the things I like to ask guests, the first thing I do ask is, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
I really love taking women specifically through transformative mindset experiences. And that's why I love what I do, right? So it started when I owned a women's fitness center and I saw the transformation of women there. And I brought that over into financial planning and then eventually over into this money mindset reset program that I have.
That's interesting. So you've kind of transformed into a different phase of your work, but maybe you can tell more about your story and what made you, you know, want to do this type of mindset work, and maybe define what the money mindset is.
Right. So my story is that I grew up in a lower middle class household. My parents didn't talk about money. I didn't really know anything about money. I knew that we lived paycheck to paycheck, but I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know if that was good or if that was bad or if anybody did it differently. I did know that I had friends who like seemed to do more and have more, but it was never really talked about. So I never really thought about it. I just, you know, lived my little life in my own little bubble. And as I got older, you know, I had a lot of different things that I went through. So I was a teenage mother. So I struggled financially there. I later married into a wealthy family and had, you know, experiences with people with money there. And then later I divorced and I was back into scarcity, right? I had nothing and I was struggling to survive. And that's when I realized that I needed to do something drastic to change my future. And I set out on like a self-improvement journey. And through that journey, I actually unwittingly rewrote my money story, my money mindset, without even knowing what I was doing. And then later, when I became a financial planner, is when I realized that this money mindset was a thing, right? Because I would be talking to some clients and they just couldn't get out of their own way, right? They had these beliefs that they had and they didn't see what I was seeing. So reflecting on that is when I realized that I had changed my money mindset and that money mindset and these internal obstacles were there. And I started delving into figuring out what that was all about and what that meant. And that's how I ended up with the money mindset mentorship program.
That's interesting, because there's a lot. I've talked to a lot of like therapists and life coaches that have talked about imposter syndrome and limiting beliefs. And it seems to be across, you know, threads across multiple issues with, you know, people, from whether, like, you know, handling money, handling, you know, whether or not they're actually happy. Because sometimes people think like, well, I want $1 million. But what is it they actually want? Like, they think the $1 million is going to make them happy. But if they've got some core things that aren't really right in their life, the $1 million isn't really going to solve that. They could end up losing it if they don't really know what they really want.
Exactly. Yeah. And limiting beliefs is a big part of the money mindset, a huge part of it. And there's internal and external limiting beliefs. So internal are things where you think that about yourself, and external are things that you think generally about the world and, you know, and your environment.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, a lot of times I've talked to people and they feel like they've got these things from childhood where there's like guilt, there's shame, there's like these beliefs that weren't not truths, like I am not good enough, I'm never going to be good enough, I'm not, you know, pretty, I'm not, you know, they've got these things, they might have come from their parents or come from their uncle or come from their grandparents or come from bullies, and they just do things that draw, like the law of attraction, they just keep on drawing that kind of situation to them, because, like, you know, in terms of I don't know, frequency, sometimes you draw frequencies to you that are dissonant, or things that are going to be not helpful because they're not really in harmony with what, where you really want to be, but you're kind of out of tune. I'm a musician, so I throw terms like that around.
Yeah. You're exactly right though, Phantom, because the stories that we have are built from our upbringing. You know, even we start absorbing information about ourselves, even when we're babies, right? Before we're even like mentally aware of what's going on, but we get them from our families, our siblings, our parents, our grandparents, our teachers, our coaches, you know, everybody that we've experienced as we've been growing up and molding our lives, even our first jobs, right? You know, some people feel like they're incapable in a job or have a mindset that they're not going to succeed in working. And that may be just because of experience that they've had where they were in a job that wasn't a good fit for them. You know, that didn't mean that they weren't good at anything. It just meant that they weren't good at that thing, right? And I think that those are the types of things where we get those limiting beliefs where we feel like we're not good enough. And you said something about like, you know, attracting the things that you focus on. You mentioned that a little bit. And that's one of the things that I work on in working with people in their money mindsets is that I think there's a couple different things out there that you can find. There's one where there's a picture of something and you're trying to focus on it. And then like a gorilla walks through the screen and then you ask people to what, you know, and nobody saw the gorilla because they were focusing on the thing. And there's a similar, I hope you know what I'm talking about. And yeah, then there's another one. Yeah. There's another one where they say to focus on, they give you like a bunch of blocks that are different colors. And they say, focus on, let's say the color yellow. And then they show you a room and they say, count how many things are yellow. And then they take the picture away and they say, how many things were red? And you have no idea. You have no idea what was red in the room because you weren't looking for anything red. And that's the idea, right? So that's the idea.
A lot of times, I think that what you say is very important. Because I think like it is an example that I've been kind of told about. And like you go get a car. And you pick like a Camry, and then suddenly when you go drive around, you see all these Camrys that they were probably there, but you never noticed them because now you're focused on, I have a Camry, I like a Camry. So your mind's saying, well, I like Camry, so now I see them. But it's not that they weren't there. It's just like you didn't notice it. So like we have a habit of kind of blocking things out and focusing on certain things, and we kind of edit, or we can create glass ceilings, like you're saying. Like if you can put yourself in that box that you can't do it, that you're not good at it. Like, why? I'm terrible at cooking. Well, if you keep on saying that, you're probably never going to get out of that loop.
Exactly. Saying I'm terrible at anything is just going to keep you focused on how terrible you are at it, not how you can improve at it. You know, you can say, gosh, I need to get better at cooking, you know, and that's a change in mindset right there. Just saying, I need to get better at it. I need to learn more about it. And dive into that growth of it rather than just keeping yourself stuffed down and stuck.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I deal with a lot of creative people, like, you know, being an artist, I run into photographers, painters, actors, you know, directors. And the one thing that's always kind of consistent is a lot of times creative people will push themselves to be in a very uncomfortable place because like you master something. And then the next thing you do is like, well, I want to go do something I know nothing about that I'm not good at, and I'm going to push it. And David Bowie kind of talked about that's like treading water, that in his career, he loved to tread water. He loved to go and put himself into a position where, yeah, I'm not good at this. I'm going to go sing with Luther Vandross, a soul singer. And I'm not really a soul singer. I'm going to go push myself to actually get it, learn how to do that because I want to do it. And so if you push yourself, you know, you don't always win on the first try. You don't go from 0 to 100. You have to work. And a lot of people, like if it's hard, do they stick with it did they learn how to actually address the lessons learned or the failures that, you know, you're not always going to win every, you know, round. Sometimes it has to build up.
Yeah. And I like to look at things as, I don't feel like there's ever a failure. I feel like it's always just a life experience, something that's going to teach you something that you can use as a launching pad to go to the next space. Right. So, I wouldn't say that anything is a failure. It's a gained life experience. So just changing the mindset on that also can help too.
But it's like, it's not everybody's cup of tea. Like when you go to change, like, you know, there are big examples in music, like Bob Dylan changed to electric. He went to a festival, a jazz festival. He went to England. He was a folky. Everybody thought he was like Arlo Guthrie, Woody Guthrie. He suddenly did this electric set and they were yelling at him and they were screaming at him and saying he's a Judas. And he yelled back, "I don't believe you." and he kept on playing exactly his new style. And he didn't stop because he felt like, this is where I am now. Now, my look through like law of attraction, I'm losing some fans like right now in that moment. But then he's gaining other fans and other people that did like it. So sometimes like you might not be everybody's cup of tea, but that doesn't mean you failed. You're just like trying something different. Right. And you know, the haters don't always have to control that, the fact that you, whether you won or not, is like, it's just all you put it out there. And it's like, it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's like, sometimes, you know, it might be something that appeals to somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's always a great experience to try new things. You learn so much from things you're bad at, and you learn so much from things you're good at too. Right. I don't think that you can appreciate the things that you're good at if you're not bad at stuff too.
Yeah. I think you just have to learn, you know, like if you don't know, like a lot of times, like if as a producer, sometimes I'll put somebody on an instrument that's not their instrument, put the bass player on the piano, put the piano player on the bass, because then what happens is the bass player brings his bass playing techniques to the piano and it sounds a little different than what the piano player would do. He starts to approach it in a way that's not conventional. And some people are so into keeping people in lanes, they don't have room for that. They're very strict, and I tend to be more experimental or expansive, and that, you know, leads to things that, well, that's not expected, but what we call like happy accidents, you know. And even in science, I'm in software development, a lot of times we'll have a plan and then something comes out of it and we didn't expect it, and it's like you have to go to management and kind of fight for it. It's like, this is actually better than what you wanted us to do.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be more profitable than what you want us to do. And you have to kind of fight for it, because, you know, you could just sit there and say, well, that's not what we're supposed to do. Let's just throw it away. But sometimes you have to realize, like, hey, this is present now. This is kind of like I'm living in that flow state and kind of, you know, really advocate for it.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it's like, how would you even know? Like, if you didn't try something different or go a different path, how would you even know if it's good or not? If you just stay in your safe lane, you're not going to have growth. You're just going to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah. So the idea of scarcity in the mindset is probably because, like, it's kind of like if you're in a codependent relationship, you know it, but you're not happy. Right. So if you're in something that's like you're stuck in and you're not, you know, you're in this kind of like, you know, desert. You're not getting what you want from your soul, your spirit, your monetarily, everything seems like it's not working. Well, that right there is like, well, that's very uncomfortable, but you might be comfortable with, you know, not pushing it, but you really kind of need to get out of that. And it might be very uncomfortable to start taking the steps. How do you get people to be more comfortable with taking the initial steps to get out of that box?
Right. So the program that I do when I work with people is I take them through some assessments that were created by psychologists from over like 40 years of experience. So I do these psychology assessments with them, and then they get written results back from that program with the psychology assessments. And then we have discussions about it, right? And I help them understand what a lot of it means. And I kind of break it down into different pieces. One of the things that I talk about is there's basically four main money scripts, and these were identified by Brad Klontz, who's a financial psychologist. He's written a lot of books. But the four that he identified are money avoidance, money worship, money status, and money vigilance. So those are the main ones. And so money avoidance is like people that are raised in lower income or disadvantaged areas. And a lot of these people are brought up to believe that money is corruptive and that rich people are greedy. And so it takes pride. They take pride then in living with less money, and it helps them feel better about their situation. It's like thinking that if money is used for bad, why would I ever want it, right? So changing the belief that you could actually use money for good, right? If I have $1 million, you know, what causes can I help? How many people can I affect? You know, maybe I want to donate to a pet shelter, or maybe I want to volunteer to help homeless, or whatever your cause is, right? You can use money for good. It doesn't have to be used for bad. But if you're constantly thinking that it's bad, then you're just going to repel the money. Mm-hmm. And then like money worship is where, you know, money's going to solve all the problems. And this is kind of what you were saying, where you were saying like, oh, if I only had $1 million, right? But happiness is not money. Money can solve some problems, right? It does solve some problems, like paying off bills and relieving some of that stress. But it's the people that are in that money worship, they're probably just going to keep spending money on material things and end up, like you said, losing that money. And then I'll go ahead and do the other ones. Money status is like people that are think that their net worth is the measure of their self-worth. So this is kind of like the keeping up with the Joneses, right? The guy across the street got a Corvette. So what do I need to get to get a better car than him, or whatever it is, right? Those people might look really rich on the outside, but really they probably have a ton of credit card debt or other detrimental financial habits about spending, trying to keep up. So they might actually be less well off than somebody who's just like the millionaire next door, who's living within their means. Which brings me to the next thing, which is money vigilance. And this is like where people are like too prudent towards money. They're too cautious, right? They don't have, a lot of risk that they want to take. So they're just super attentive to their finances, and they might not, you know, put any risk. They might just keep everything in a savings account and not earn any interest on it and actually be losing money because they're not keeping up with inflation. So I kind of went off on a long spiel there about, but I wanted to make sure that we touched on those four main ones.
Yeah, those are all, they make it like a lot of sense in terms of like the pillars of the concept. And I think a lot of times, you know, I think people make mistakes in terms of being going to extremes. And, you know, I'm a Buddhist, so I tend to talk about balance. And what I find is like, if you have something that's like too out of balance, like somebody takes crazy risks, right? So they're not risk avoidant, but they take very risky things and then they could lose all the money. Whereas you have somebody more balanced portfolio, you have some part of it is at risk, some part of it is safe, some part of it's kind of moderate, it's very balanced. And, you know, there are examples of some people that they're willing to take more risk and they can be very successful, but it's kind of like a gambling situation. Yeah, you could win a bunch of times in a row, but that doesn't mean that you actually have a strategy. You're kind of just flipping the dice. So like in terms of having some kind of centered approach, that's not too much hot, not too cold, you know, kind of just right. How do you get people, you know, people have different personalities. They might kind of go to different pendulums to like extremes of which way they're going to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, I discussed those mindset matters in my money mindset mentoring, but I don't discuss their actual finances. That's a separate thing. But yeah, it's part of what I do in the money mindset thing too, is just helping people understand where they are and, you know, how they can modify that to make their lives better.
Yeah, this is interesting because like from what you're saying, that like, you know, the person's too careful, they're costing themselves money. So it's like, both polar opposite, you know, the polar regions can be not as effective. Like, oh, I'm safe. But you're like, well, you're not keeping up with inflation, like you mentioned.
Right. And it's about, you know, just your financial well-being, which goes well beyond just the dollars themselves. So you have to be comfortable in what you're investing in, right? And how it's invested. So you have to be comfortable with that. So you have to have that harmony, because you're not going to be happy if you have something that you feel like is, you're not comfortable with, it's too risky for you or not enough risky for you, right? You have to be comfortable and confident in your strategy. You want to have harmony between your personal life, your career choice, that financial security and freedom, and understanding that achieving well-being is essential for a fulfilling life, right? And financial stability is the foundation of that, which is why so many people are so always worried about money, because they know that the foundation of what we live on is that sense of well-being and financial stability.
It's interesting because, like, in the arts, there's this kind of concept that's kind of like the person that thinks money's not good, right? The starving artist is kind of put on this pedestal. So I'm not going to really be about money. I'm going to be about my art. And I'm not going to try to, like, you know, plan out financially. I'm just going to be kind of living on a margin. And I'm like, you know. But a lot of times there are other types of artists that say, you know, there's nothing wrong with actually making money. That doesn't mean I'm not an artist, that I don't have artistic, you know, guidance. So, like, the mindset there is like, you don't have to live in scarcity to be like this pure starving artist concept.
Right. And that, so the starving artist is a perfect example of something that is an external limiting belief, right? But it's also can be internal if you're the artist. So it can go either way. And having that mindset, yeah, of course, how are you ever going to attract money and how are you ever going to sell your art and be successful if you just feel like you're the starving artist or you put yourself out there as the starving artist, right? So like you said, you attract what you're looking for. If you're looking for only the yellow stuff, you're only going to see the yellow stuff. You're not going to see the red stuff.
Yeah. And the law of attraction is really interesting because, like, once you get to a point where you're more harmonious, or you're in the frequency that's kind of going to bring you abundance, and people believe that you can kind of get into a world where, you know, opportunities happen, because, like, if you're prickly and you're kind of putting out vibes that don't make it so you can have connections, that you can't get relationships, you can't build partnerships because you're putting out this vibe when nobody wants to be around you. If you put out a vibe that kind of shows some level of confidence, some level of security, some level of, like, wow, this person knows where they want to go, they're kind of directed, then things will come to you because you're in that zone where you're making people feel like, oh yeah, they can help you. You're not pushing them away. They're seeing that there's opportunities to link. And, you know, that's kind of, we're a very social beings, and to be very successful, you have to make those connections.
I love that you mentioned abundance and the social connections in the same sentence, because that's something that I find I talk about a lot is when people are networking for business, right? And they're out there and they're talking to people and they're handing out business cards and they're trying to drum up business. The abundance mindset is huge, because if you feel like you're out there competing with everybody else in the room for business, what kind of vibe are you putting out? But if you're out there and you're like, there's enough business to go around for everybody, and here's my card, and, you know, maybe my personality fits you, maybe it doesn't, maybe you want to work with the other guy, and that's okay. It's a completely different vibe that you're putting out when you're networking and talking to people.
Yeah, it's kind of like the, how do you get that story? Because I think, you know, there's a concept you have of money story and money script. And, you know, I think a lot of times with artists, we have this idea, like, you could go by yourself and try to book that show in the club. Or you could go and find a bunch of like-minded individuals and build a collective and go to the booker and say, hey, I'm not just going by myself. I got 10 other bands with me, and we could have dancers, and we have a comedian. We can bring this collective to the club, and we can pack the club with our fan base, and we'll have more of a chance of being successful than just trying to go out by myself. So it's a different mindset. It was like, I'm just going to go up by myself and do it. And that's cool. I mean, there's a lot of independence and individualism, but sometimes it's like, it's actually smarter to go with this idea of, oh, I could actually look at this whole community and we could try to do it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you there. And that's just, it's a positive network. It's a positive vibe. It's less competitive. You know, you don't feel like you're all against each other. So I love that.
Yeah, that's the thing that you mentioned is kind of people, sales guys kind of going to salespeople going against each other and thinking like, well, I got to get all the sales. I got to get all the commission. You know, I got to get all the royalties. And so then you're kind of not, you know, you're coming in that room, what kind of vibe are you? Do you very competitive vibe, very aggressive vibe? And so are people going to really want to work with you? They said, well, this guy's going to take away my business. He's going to take away my clients. He's going to take my commissions. Like, why do I want him here?
And I think it's the idea that when you're thinking that you're in competition with everyone, you also come off as more desperate to get the business. Whereas if you're not, then you're like, you know, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. And it's, you know, your choice. And people understand then that they're not being sold to as heavily. So it just comes off a lot different. So yeah. I've worked with a lot of people that are salespeople. And that's one of the things that I try to help them with is that abundance mindset, right? Because they're so used to being in that, like, I got to go get it. I got to go get the next sale. I got to go do it. I got to be out there. I got to be, you know, jamming through the prospects. And to get that like abundance mindset there, like you have to keep working. Yeah, you have to keep doing it. But the different mindset is that not that you got to go get it and you're desperate to make the sale, but just that the sales are out there. And if this one didn't work, the next one might. And you just got to keep moving through it and have that mindset that it's going to come along.
That's interesting because, you know, like podcasts today, we have a lot of podcasts. They're like business podcasts and sales type podcasts. People are kind of taking this infomercial approach. And sometimes that doesn't work because what podcasting has been is kind of this idea of you have the conversation like we're having. We're having like a live conversation. It's not scripted. Doesn't seem fake. It seems authentic, right? If you start bringing in like, oh, I'm going to make this infomercial like I see on TV and I'm selling this vacuum cleaner for the next half hour versus actually talking to the audience about, well, how can I have a cleaning solution? And actually, maybe people can call in. It feels like the person's not an actor. Maybe they're not perfect in their approach. They seem like a regular person. That to me is like the vulnerability of it, the authentic nature of it, the fact that you could have maybe some missteps, not totally scripted, it's not perfect, but it seems real.
Yeah.
And I think that to me is this, maybe you can talk about like in money stories or money scripts, like different ways to approach things to be more authentic.
Yeah. Being your authentic self is huge, right? And that does come into play when you're talking about your money story or money scripts or whatever you want to call it, money personality. Because when you show up and you're not your authentic self, people know it, right? And that's kind of that like keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing that I talked about, the money worshipers, right? And that's where you're just trying to keep up and you're not being who you really are. So that inauthenticity is not a good thing to have when you're trying to sell somebody something.
Yeah, sometimes like what I notice, like we'll see in social media, we'll see these trends, right? Like you have these posting trends and real trends, right? So if the real trends from the algorithm say, if I go make something that's similar to this, that gets a million views, then I can get that algorithm, but to give me the million views. The question is like, well, just to clone what's getting a million views, is that really what you're trying to say? If you use the same cat video with the same 30 seconds soundbite, you're just cloning something somebody already did. But are you trying to actually send a message or are you just trying to be popular? What is the goal?
Right.
Are you actually trying to sell a service? Are you trying to connect people to your authentic self? If you're just trying to get the top of the algorithm, what's the purpose of that? What is it you're actually trying to do?
Right. Are you just trying to be the most popular or are you trying to help people or do you have a business or, you know, what is your ultimate goal? And I think that is something that I talk about too a lot is what is your ultimate goal? Like, where do you want to be? And you know, sometimes where you want to be is not a thing, it's a feeling. So the feeling that you want when you retire is you want to be, most people, I should say, not everybody, but you want to be carefree and you want to feel like, you know, I'm good. And you don't want to have all that worry and stress about money, right? So figuring out how to get that mindset, that's a mindset, right? Carefree. It has to do with how you feel about your money and your surroundings. So when we talk about goals, sometimes the goals are not a thing, but they're a feeling.
Yeah, it's like when people during the Great Resignation, they start realizing like, hey, I've been in this cubicle for 20 years and now I don't really fit there. And I'm going to be honest that I really don't fit there. And maybe I want to go back with my inner child and say, hey, I wanted to do some, you know, theater. I wanted to go paint. I wanted to go sail. I wanted to go do X. And I felt like I couldn't. And now maybe I have the right to be happy. And some people maybe feel because of duty or because of obligations, they can't even entertain what they actually really want. And at some point they get some kind of, you know, critical mass and it's like, oh, I really need to get into something that makes me feel something, you know, other than just blasé.
And to understand that you have the right to be happy, because that's an internal limiting belief that you don't have the right to be happy. And the thing with the internal limiting beliefs is most people don't even know that they're there. You have to be mindful and intentional about figuring out what they are, right? So it's not like you're just like, oh yeah, I know I have that. Most people don't know that they do. But what needs to happen is a person needs to come to a point where they realize like, I need to change and I need to do something for personal growth. And that's where they start exploring, like, what are my limiting beliefs? What is my mindset about money? What is my mindset about work, life, whatever it happens to be? They need to start questioning themselves. And so the first step is to identify what those limiting beliefs are, right? Or even just identify what a belief is, right? And then ask yourself, is this true? Is this a true belief? Listen to the things that you're saying to yourself or to other people, whether it's an internal thought or it's an external something that you're saying, like, you know, I suck at golf. Well, of course you do if that's what you're telling people. once you figure out what the source is, why am I saying that? Why am I saying that? Am I comparing myself to somebody else? Have I been trying really hard, but not trying in the right way? You know, what do I need to change about that would make that different? Or even just saying like, I don't believe that anymore, right? I don't believe anymore that I don't have the right to be happy. I absolutely have the right to be happy. And then a lot of it is imagining being free from that belief. So imagine yourself happy, right? So you start imagining yourself happy. And a lot of people talk about manifestation now, and that's not a new thing. That's been going on since Napoleon Hill wrote, you know, Think and Grow Rich, however many years ago that was. I mean, that was all about manifestation too, and just imagining yourself. And it's the idea of it's what you're focusing on. It's absolutely what you're focusing on. And that's what it's really all about. Whether you say it's from Think and Grow Rich, from Napoleon Hill, or you say it's from a manifestation, whatever it is, you're replacing your beliefs and you're focusing on something new and positive. And that's how you get the motivation or the momentum to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because the manifestation, a lot of times for artists, like what we get into is like the idea of being in the present, in that kind of flow state or stream of consciousness. Because a lot of times we'll have the same kind of problems anybody has, like we want to plan something out and then we'll want it to be perfect. And so I might go on to a sheet of music and try to write something that's like a classical type piece, a big, really, really intricate, really, really tight, very narrow, because I'm being very focused about what I want. And then I find out, like, you know, after I'm done with that, well, it's not really sounding where I want to be. And if you then go with more of a flow state, kind of stream of consciousness, well, I'm just going to jump on the piano and this recorder comes in the moment. A lot of times that work, if you trust yourself, you've been playing for 20 years, that comes out better than what you tried to plan out, because it's actually what's in your heart and your soul, and you kind of get aligned with the muse. And people say, oh, what's that? That sounds foo-foo. But you can take that and you could apply that to somebody who's a public speaker. and they've got a set script, and they go to an audience and they're going to go with their set script, but then they read the room and they start realizing what they had set isn't fitting that crowd, isn't fitting that moment. And you can do the same thing a jazz musician does and improvise and trust your experience to know what to say based on that moment, based on the people in the room, based on the vibe.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that, because, you know, sometimes you show up with a message and you realize that this message is not for this audience. And that's the number one thing about public speaking, is to make it about your audience. It's not about you, the speaker, it's about your audience. And if your audience feels like they had a good experience, that's what makes you a good speaker. You being a speaker and working on your skills does help, but what makes you a good speaker is making sure that your audience feels like they got a message, they received a message.
Yeah, it's just being connected and like reading the room, reading the body language, you know, reading people's faces and saying, oh, that's not really going over. And then realizing what is going over and then giving them more of that. And it's just being not locked in to something that you had a preconceived notion and now you're there.
Yeah.
And so being able to, and that's also being listening skills. Like you get into a meeting and you had this set idea, and then the people in the meeting start saying X, Y, Z, but you didn't have that in your plan. So you just ignore it. You just go with what you were going to go with. Well, you know, in software design, what we've learned is like having that JAD session, having this application session where we're all in the room, we listen to everybody and we go on the whiteboard and it's like, hey, I might've had a preconceived notion, but this is right now. And this other person has a better idea than me. And it's not really about ego. It's about what is the better idea, you know, and if the better idea wasn't my idea, it's fine. You know, you still go with it.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you might not think it's a better idea, but you want to be sure that you're in space and you explore that idea. And it may be that your initial instinct that it wasn't a good idea is wrong, right? You just didn't have the full picture. So, you know, being open to, you know, learning more about that also helps.
Yeah, I think it's like lessons learned, because a lot of people, I don't know if they go back and do like an assessment of, you know, like in music, you could say, well, like, did I hit a bad note or was that an opportunity? A lot of jazz musicians will say there's no bad note. There's only opportunities to kind of evolve the piece. And that's kind of this mindset where you're like, you're not going back and being self-critical about what you did. You're saying, hey, I actually took the piece to another place, and that's actually cool. Not that I messed up the piece because I hit the wrong note. It's a different mindset.
Yeah, and that goes back to what I said before about failures. I don't believe there's any such thing as failure. It's all a learning experience. It's a learning experience to grow and use that as your launching pad or stepping stone for the next thing. So same type of thing. Yep.
Do you have good examples of maybe like three, like lessons learned that people, you know, could really improve their management of their money story with, like something that you've learned over time that maybe you can kind of give to the audience is like a lesson learned from a money story situation?
Well, there's a lot. I think if I had to give just some general tips, one thing would be that, you know, improving your financial health doesn't mean just making more money. It means smart money management, developing a healthy relationship with your finances, having some difficult conversations with yourself, and being aware of the challenges that are coming your way. You know, are you an overspender? Are you an underspender? Are you just trying to keep up with other people? Do you have blocks in your head that are keeping you from earning more money or understanding that you can be successful? What are those? One other thing I like to talk about a lot is, Stephen R. Covey's four quadrants. So he has this, I don't know if you've heard of this. Have you heard of that before?
I think somebody mentioned it.
Okay.
A couple years ago. I wouldn't have had a podcaster on.
Yeah. It's a time management matrix, and it focuses on optimizing your time and energy towards the most productive tasks. So you've got like four quadrants, and it works better if you have a physical like picture to look at. But there's urgent and important, not urgent, but important, urgent, but not important, and not urgent and not important, right? So the idea is that if you can focus on quadrant two, which is urgent, but important, those are the things that are directly related to mission and your goals. They're the things that were later like related to where you want to get to. So they're not urgent. Like you have the idea, this is where I want to go. It's important to you, but because it's not urgent, people tend to just like put it off. They put it off, they put it off, put it off. And then quadrant one is where things are urgent and important. And those are like crises, right? These are the things that demand immediate attention. And the idea is that if you can focus more on quadrant two, which is the urgent and important, the things that are directly related to your goals, then the more you focus on that, the less things will end up being a crisis, right?
Yeah.
So, and then the other two boxes are like urgent, but not important, and not urgent and not important. So they're both not important things. And those are things that you just want to generally spend less time on, right? You know, less time watching TV, scrolling social media, you know, just the aimless things that you're doing that are just wasting time. And then, you know, the things that just aren't, you know, that are time wasters, right? They're like meetings without an agenda. Like, do we really have to have this meeting, or unnecessarily calls, or things like that? Those are the things you want to try to minimize. But getting people in that mindset of like, I need to pay attention to the things that are important, whether they're urgent or not, is a huge piece in getting people to focus on success.
That's very interesting, because like we have some scales in software design where we measure like priority, you know, defects. And they have a tendency, like management wants to make all the defects priority one, even if it's actually low impact. Like example is like, if you take a priority 10 item and make it priority one, but it only happens like 50 cases. And normally priority one is it happens to a million cases, but somebody suddenly puts that priority 10 in the same bucket as priority one. It's like, well, you're only hitting 50 cases instead of a million. Why are you spending time on that? Right. And so a lot of times, you know, people will push things. They're even more, it's more an opinion or a feeling, or it's like they're putting out a fire, but it's not actually as critical mass as it would appear to be. And like you said, people spend a lot of time on something that really is not, you know, really what they should focus on. It's like they're wasting time. It's like, so if you can prioritize or you can budget, and this kind of goes into it, it's like, would you think of that as like budgeting time or budgeting your overall expenses? Maybe we can talk about budgeting and how that fits into the overall picture.
Yeah. So budgeting is a part of your healthy finances, right? But in the mindset work, I just work on mindset alone. So I don't work with people on their budgeting in the money mindset business, but there are financial coaches, financial advisors, financial planners out there that can help you with budgeting. And I highly recommend that if you want to work on budgeting, that you reach out to a professional on that. There's something you just said, and I'm trying to remember what it was that keyed something to me, but I'm not sure what it was, but it reminded me of a story recently where I was talking to somebody, about perfection. That's what it was. So you were talking about like moving the thing that had the only the 50 things up to the top of the list. And that is a mindset of perfection, right? You need everything to be perfect. And it's great that things are good and that you pay attention to detail, but when you're wasting your time on these little tiny things, you have all these other things that you're missing out on that could be much more beneficial to you that you could be focusing on, right? So I was recently talking to a client of mine about her path and where she was going, and she was trying to decide, should she go back to school? Should she keep working and have you know, her company pay for it? If she was in this job, this would happen. If she was in that job, that would happen. You know, should she get this license first or go to school first? And, you know, we were talking about it and talking about all the different things that she could do. And, you know, she was having a really hard time deciding. And I said, you know what? Here's what you need to know. All of these paths are great paths. Stop spending so much time figuring out which one is the best path, which is the most perfect path, because it doesn't matter. They're all good paths. Sometimes you just have to take what's coming your way and be like, okay, this is the way it's going, and just go with it. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it, and it was that, that whole idea of like, I'm trying to find the perfect thing. I want to make sure I don't make any mistakes, but yet I'm like, just do it.
Just, yeah.
Just take a step in one direction and none of them are bad directions. So.
Yeah. It's kind of like the artist problem where like you have all this work. I've dealt with like a painter. You go into their gallery. I mean, their loft, they've got like 100 paintings. And you ask them like, are any of these in the gallery? Well, they're not ready yet. And I'm like, well, I'm not like an art critic, but it looks like there's a lot of stuff in here that could be in a gallery. It's like, you're not even trying. Well, I'm not ready. It's like, so the problem is like, they're going, trying to be perfect. And I've run into it with like musicians. I've run into it with other types of people that they have all this work and then they're not putting it out. And it's not like they haven't done it. They're just like not presenting it. And they just, they're scared to pull the trigger. And it's really that vulnerability issue. They're kind of scared of what the impact of actually speaking up or putting it out there. Mm-hmm. You know, like why people don't raise their hand because they're scared of getting knocked down by what they said. It's like, well, it doesn't have to be perfect. This, you just want to get involved. You know, say what's in your head, because, you know, maybe you're saying, you're going to say something people need to hear and we won't know unless you say it.
Right. And that's an internal limiting belief. You know, it's not good enough yet. This piece isn't good enough yet. I'm not good enough yet. Right. So.
Yeah. That's always hard because my heart makes it. Then you're like, you said, like, you're like, if you have all these things that you want to get trained on and are all good choices, like you said, it really doesn't matter which one you do first. But if you get this paralysis, cause I don't know which one to go to.
Yeah.
Then you're a non-decision is just still a decision. You're not doing anything.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I think there's a musical quote. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a famous thing. Yeah. So that's, so they get into the idea of working with people like in groups or one-on-one. So do you do both? Do you work with people in groups and do you have one-on-one, you know, with people? They would get into a big, like a session with like multiple people or one-on-ones.
Yeah. So I do strictly a group program. So it's a course, it's an 8-week course. It's a transformational journey and it is just for women. Eventually I'll open it up to men too, because men also have money mindset issues, but I wanted to focus on women in the beginning just for, you know, advertising purposes and getting it going. But it really helps them figure out why they're doing the things that they're doing. And I think that's the main thing. So it has a series of assessments, like I said, that are created by psychologists of over 40 years worth of research that they've done. And then we talk together in the group. So it's live on Zoom, right? So it's mm-hmm. live, but it's virtual. And they're from all over the place, anywhere within the United States that doesn't have a location since it's all virtual. And we talk through the different things, and having the group really helps because it lets you know that you're not the only person and that other people have mm-hmm. similar things. And I think that doing one-on-one, you're still like in that silo where you're just looking at yourself and you feel like you have issues, like I have problems, but it's not issues or problems. It's really just life. And when you have it in the group context, people realize this is just life. This isn't just me. This is life. Everybody has this. Literally everybody has a money mindset issue of some kind, or even just a limiting belief of some kind, right? Everybody does. And there's biases and things that you can talk about, you know, why people might think things are a certain way, but in that group setting, it really helps people to connect and realize that they are taking a transformational journey with other people.
I think it's important to have that group because, you know, I was in college, I was into sociology. I was into microcosm, macrocosm kind of concepts and the group kind of behavior. It's a study of group behavior, sociology. And what you do find is like, if you can get people to be in that group, they, you know, the idea of being, you know, Anno me was this idea. It's more of like an individual. They're disconnected from society. Like you're saying, if you were just with that one person, they don't see the similarities that everybody's feeling like in the same zone. And so like when you have that group, then people can see they're not alone. And when you're not alone, you're probably more likely to say, oh, I this is not all my problem. this is like a societal problem. This is a problem that maybe my group has, and I can actually find advocates and people to be like, you know, in the same space. So then I don't feel alone. I don't feel like I'm on the outside of everything. Cause as human beings, we're so into being connected that you don't want to feel disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea that I have is building a community also, right? So as I take groups of women through the cohort, they'll have their own community within their little cohort that they've gone through. But then I want to bring them together as a whole in a bigger realm after that. So as people go through the cohorts, they'll have the resources of everybody that's been through it and can build a community there.
So in this program, do you have some really interesting success stories that maybe you can kind of relay from you know, to kind of tell people about what you know, the result of what you've been doing and maybe tell a story?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the eye opening, right? The idea that, wow, I didn't realize that I've had all these things holding me back. I didn't realize that all these internal thoughts I had brought with me from my childhood, from, you know, my teachers in elementary school. I get a lot of that, like teachers in elementary school for some reason. Good experiences and bad experiences. You know, people share back and forth about things that happened to them in their life that really affected them. And here's the thing, it can be like one instance where it just really leaves an impact on somebody. And it could be with a family member, like a teacher, a coach, anything. And there could be like this one instance that just left this huge impact that really made them feel that way about themselves. And them realizing that, oh my gosh, I've been carrying that with me for all these years and it's been holding me back and I didn't even know it. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just coming to realization that these things have been there. I know you have, and you probably are going to mention that there's a link there that I want to tell what that link is. It's actually a link to a money mindset, quiz. It's a very short quiz and it helps you figure out like what your financial wellness is. And it's a sample of a small sample of one of the assessments that I use in my cohort. So it'll give you a written feedback on where you stand and give you an idea of what that looks like. And then, of course, you can always find more information on my website, which is mindsetandmoney.com. So just my little plug right there. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's cool. I always ask people what the link actually goes to. So yeah. Glad you brought that up. Yep. So other thing I was wondering, like, I've talked to a lot of people, and if you have a female focused group setting, do you have issues where people have been in the kind of caretaker, or they're always in that kind of role of they have to be in more of a people pleaser role, and they start to realize that that's not actually moving them forward, that yes, they're not really satisfying their own needs, or they're always like kind of subjugating that to being a people pleaser, or they're, you know, in that type of mindset.
Absolutely. So most people, not all, that are people pleasers are that way because they are trying to satisfy something that happened to them earlier in their life. Whether there was somebody who always, like maybe a parent who always talked negatively about them, or they felt negative, like they weren't okay. So they feel like they need to please everybody and they need to make sure that everybody likes them, right? And sometimes I do refer people out to therapists also, because I am not a therapist. I don't give specific behavioral advice like that, or even financial advice. It's strictly money mindset and concepts. So I'll refer people out to professionals when they need that extra help. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. That's something that comes up a lot, especially with women being the people pleaser.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, because the mindset might be like, well, everything is really for other people. Like all their decisions financially might be not fully their interest, but the interest of a lot of other members of their family, rather than maybe their own financial independence.
Yeah. And somebody somewhere called that economic outpatient therapy, is in a book. But it's making sure that you're financially healthy and not just helping everybody else, whether it's helping your kids, because a lot of us are helping our 20-some-year-old kids, even after college, because everything's so expensive right now, they can't afford to live on their own. Or we're helping our aging parents. Some of us are helping both because we're in the sandwich generation, right? But you want to make sure that you're not sabotaging your own well-being, right?
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you have that balance there and that you understand that you need to take care of yourself first. Always put on your oxygen mask first.
Yeah, you might feel a little guilty if you're like, oh, well, I got to take care of my mom and my college age student because they can't get the job and they got this big debt from because they don't have the skills yet. It's like, well, I got the degree, but they're looking for 5 years experience. Well, I don't have the 5 years because I have the degree.
Yeah.
So they kind of go round and round. It's like, well, how do I get that? Like, well, I got to find it. You know, I got to volunteer. I got to do. Well, I'm not making money. I got to pay the bill. But so then, like, then you're like you said, the sandwich generation, where like, oh wow, I'm responsible for my elder and my young kid.
Yeah.
Like, where's my plan? Because now my plan is getting pushed out for all these other people.
Yep. And there's a lot of us out there. I'm one of them. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's all balance. Like, how do you balance that? So you have to, do something for yourself. You have to have some plan. Is maybe not, you know, where you got to start somewhere. So I think that's probably like baby steps. Is that always like the best kind of advice? Because some people always want to go 0 to 100 and get everything done. Is it more incremental, like your guidance?
You know, it depends on the person, you know, and really it's, you know, I'm not telling them what to do. It is mentorship. So it's kind of guiding them along. I like to use the term mentorship rather than coaching because I'm someone who's been there and I want to help other people go through the same thing that I went through. I have an actual process now. It's not just random me figuring it out, but there's an actual process now that I can take them through. I call it mentorship. And it's not me telling them what to do. It's me helping them to realize, to self-realize what they need to do. And there's collaboration in there, you know, from me and from other people in the group, right? So they get the opinions of other people and then they can see, like, it's not just this one person, you know, telling me that I should do this, but other people are saying, yeah, you should do that, right? They're encouraging them.
Yeah, it's probably more sustainable than waiting for somebody to give them exact step-by-step everything, because I think a lot of times, like, you have to give people the tools so they can kind of learn how to work, you know, within their own world, right? Like, if they're always looking for some outside, like, direction, that might not actually work for everybody, because like one size doesn't fit all,
right? And I feel like if I just gave people steps and I said, here's what you need to do, and they just did the steps, they might go through it and they might see a little bit of transformation, but they're not going to have that true mindset, like, my whole life looks, I look at life completely different now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a holistic thing, and people are so individualistic, it's hard to fit everybody into step type of programs. You know, people want to find those things because it seems easy.
Yeah,
you know, it was like, oh, I got 20 steps, then I'm done. But life tends to be like, I need to be able to do something that's sustainable. And actually fits my situation. So if I talk to somebody that actually understands what I'm saying, rather than trying to fit me into their 10, 20 steps, they're probably going to give me better guidance.
Yeah. And I do have a curriculum that I follow and everything, but it's really, they go through the curriculum, they do some homework, and then we talk about it. And that's where we talk about and we get the real personal side of it and we get everybody's story and we get everybody's opinions. And that's where the real work comes in. Cause you can just take the assessments and get the written feedback. Mm-hmm. But if you're not having actual conversations about how to implement that and you know, the encouragement of the other people in the community, it's not going to be as useful.
Yeah. It's got the real time kind of classroom, you know, you know, if you went to a liberal arts college, it wasn't just, you know, it's the fact that you were on the campus, they're in that community, that in that classroom, you're there. That's how you learned, by being around the people learning at the same time. You know,
it's
kind of, that's the whole process. And so when you build that kind of virtual, you know, room that people can have that conversation. It creates that kind of, you know, capability to feed off of everybody in the room, everybody's input. And like you said, it's not just a one-on-one. That's a really cool process.
Yeah. And people have asked me why I did it virtual instead of doing it in person. And really it's because it allows more people to participate. And it brings people in from anywhere, right? So they can come from anywhere within the United States. And it's, you know, to me, you're building relationships with people that you wouldn't have met if it was just in person.
Yeah, it's a wider world. I mean, the net is so powerful. You know, that's why we're doing what we're doing here, is that we can talk to people from all over the world. You know, that's what the whole point of the podcast is. Like, we talk to people in different time zones, different countries. And because we can reach that. And, you know, if I live in New Hampshire, if I was only going to do it, it's like the only people who could come to a studio in New Hampshire, it's like, well, I'd be kind of limited to who I'm talking to. But thank you again for being a guest on the Family Liquor Ghost podcast. It always goes by quicker than we ever thought. We were at like our hour mark, but again, your bit.ly link is there and it'll be fully clickable. As you said, that you get that assessment if you click on it. And we want to thank you again for being a guest on the Family Liquor Ghost podcast. And we were live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and we'll be on all the other platforms that you can listen to or watch podcasts by the end of today. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thanks, Phantom. I'm glad you had me.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.